anyone knowing you're ever there. You will become ghost soldiers of the city jungle. You will not just become part of the underworld, you will own it. And I will make you appreciate the works of the Spanish surrealists, because they are the best artists the world ever conspired to create, and they are unappreciated by modern society. Are there any questions? They stare back blankly. Osgard clears his throat.
Ephraim.
Yes, Osgard.
Forgot to mention. Only half speak common.
I close my eyes. I hate you.
Chapter 25. Virginia. Oligarchs. And immediate cessation of federal tax shelter provisions for unionized labor, guilds, and other collectives deleterious to the will of the free market. This brings us to Proposal 6.3. Senator Britannia Ag Krieg has period marks for eyes, and a widow's peak that could chip ice for my nightly bourbon. Chief negotiator for the Zenith Ring, the Silver's Common Interest Federation, Krieg stands in the center hollow of their halo table, located within Sun Industries' Zenith Spire. Stained by big city lights, the clouds form a carpet far beneath the spire. At 15 unnecessary kilometers in height, it is the tallest building in all Hyperion, dwarfing the memory of the old society military headquarters. Another apt metaphor for its creator, as well as our time. There are no senators present save Britannia. The kept pets are sequestered downstairs, awaiting the orders of their true masters. 33 silver trillionaires of the Zenith Ring sip tea from Ionian porcelain, in smug satisfaction that they don't visit the sovereign. She visits them. Heralding from asteroids, planets, moons, and deep space trade stations, they share only four common virtues: their colour, their religious conviction in the definition of the free market, not that they mind the government being their chief customer, their obsession with individual autonomy, and their determination to act at all times like complete assholes. Not one of the oligarchs, save Quicksilver, was rich before the war. Now they represent the machine of war. Drakenjäger factories, shipyards, textiles, pharmaceuticals, rubber plants, shipping interests, silicon products. Without their companies, which I admit they did build against intense competition, we'd fight with sticks and stones. Quicksilver, the lone quadrillionaire, doesn't bother sitting at a place of prestige. He's off to the far right of the asteroid diamond table, sandwiched between a munition supplier and the asteroid mining magnate, who donated the table and deducted it from his taxes. The slump-shouldered, ham-fisted titan of industry doesn't look like the man who, along with Fitchner, engineered the destruction of the society. He is more concerned with the sugar in his tea than Senator Krieg's outrageous demands. He knows he'll get what he wants, because I don't want to fight with sticks and stones, because I need their silver votes, because without his helium, the ships he builds us will sputter and die. Even the eerie silver orb robot that floats ever-present over his shoulder couldn't make him aware of my promise to Publius. If he knew, he'd be beating me in private with verbal uppercuts and haymakers. He has been an enigma of late, his demands increasingly peculiar and opaque, which leads me to consider the possibility that he knows something I don't. I interrupt Krieg's soliloquy to gesture behind her. What the devil is that? The artwork beyond the ring table is a 15-meter-tall vanity of unrefined metal, morphed into a shape roughly mimicking a winged heel. Britannia looks back at it in irritation. That is the Dawn of Hermes, sculpted from fused Oort cloud dust by the master maker Glerastes of Mercury. The Honourable Regulus Argsoon acquired it 2 years ago at an Ophion guild auction for a record purchase price of 94 billion credits, roughly the cost of two destroyers, or enough food to feed the Sumerian assimilation camps for 46 and a half months. The industrialists clatter their teaspoons on their teacups in salute. Krieg continues her ransom demands. It is not the first time I've wished for her to be infected by the agonizing intrusion of a parasitic organism. I should have introduced her to my brother when I had the chance. By the sound of Nakamura's shifting armor behind me, I can tell she agrees. A middling account executive for Silicon Goods before the Rising, Senator Krieg made her fortune negotiating buyouts of liberated mines from Red Clans for Sun Industries during Quicksilver's mad dash to buy out the majority of the H3 market. What I released from my family's holding to Reds, he purchased not 2 months later. The Reds were properly represented by the White Guilds and chose gross proceeds instead of a one-time buyout. The contracts were thorough. It was all perfectly legal. But so is murder during wartime. Who possibly could have expected there to be no gross proceeds, because the immensely rich helium mines still, according to the books, operate at a net loss? Me, namely. But the Reds, like everyone else in our society, suspected I acted in self-interest and thus paid no heed to my warnings. Resetting automation limits to their former levels and concluding with an elimination of Senator Caravelle's flesh and bone quotas. Her words devolve into a faint buzzing, and I yawn as she progresses to the last demands before finally reaching her denouement. An oral agreement will suffice for now, but amendments must be placed on the bill before the vote. Not all, naturally. We don't want to kill it, but certain provisions so that we can feel comfortable moving forward in good faith. These are our recommendations. The teacups tinkle, and the industrialists sit back in smug satisfaction to wait for my usual reluctant agreement. But I've been saving up my chips. I uncross my legs and put my boots up on the table. Quicksilver sees and tilts his head in interest. I extend a hand backward. Nakamura hands me my apple. I strip small pieces away with my boot knife and watch the silvers as I eat. Quicksilver chuckles to himself and waits in good nature for me to conclude the show. They look so smug. And why not? They've always gotten what they want from me. Because it was cheaper to agree with them than to teach them. And they are good at what they do. Staggeringly efficient, inventive, ambitious and productive. But ancient Celts didn't invent spurs because horses are obedient. When the apple is little but core, I toss it on the table. I extend my hand back to Holiday again. She hands me ear caps. I insert them and reach back one last time. Now, she hands me her anti-tank rail rifle. My answer to your proposal. Spitting an apple seed out of my mouth, I stand, shoulder the gun, take aim over the oligarchs, and fire around into the dawn of Hermes. They dive to the floor in terror. The magnetically propelled uranium round carves a trail of blue friction flames over their heads, setting the hair of Senator Krieg on fire, and hits the statue with the force of a Pilum missile. The oligarchs hold their wailing ears and peek out from behind the table. Smoke twirls through the hole blasted in the back of the room. The statue is in ruins. I admire the gun and toss it back to Nakamura. I take off my ear caps to dead silence. You just bankrupted 3 insurance companies, Quicksilver says, stirring the dust into his tea before taking a sip. One of the silvers clutches his cravat and, ears deafened by the report of the gun, shrieks in angst. Apologies, Bartus, Quicksilver says. I told you, you should have split the liability. The 49-year-old human male is temporarily experiencing reduced auditory function of 90%, Quicksilver's sentinel robot explains. Oh, remind me to tell him later. Yes, Master. Of the 33 industrialists, Quicksilver alone did not move. The moment the gun touched my hand, the air distorted around him, bending the flames away. Sound also seems not to have penetrated. Curious technology. Did it come from his sentinel drone? I can't tell. It drifts above his head like a pendulum, emitting arcane high-pitched frequencies. Interesting. Holiday tracks it like a scout, no doubt wondering how best to kill it and how many ways it could kill her. She better be using that sensor packet she brought. I like mysteries even less than bad breath. It is time to address the room. My good men, I repeat four times until I have their attention. Today is not a day for extortion. Today is the day for patriots. You should ask what you can do for our distressed republic. Instead, you present it with demands. Instead of rallying votes to help your comrades, you jockey for gain. I look at Quicksilver. I asked for a private meeting, and he ambushed me with this, as I knew he would. For too long he's been distracted, cantankerous, as if his coronation were on the horizon and all this was merely an inconvenience. He's working on something. Some project even with all my spies I am unable to identify. We don't have time for pet projects. What hesitation I had is now gone. The deck must be reshuffled. I soften my tone for him. There was a time when two good men stood against tyranny. Fitchner Al Barker, and you. Where did that man go? He doesn't care to answer. Give them the recording, so I know they all heard me, I tell Nakamura. I turn back to Quicksilver. My answer to your extortion is no. My counteroffer is this. You have 5 seconds to tell your senators downstairs they will vote with me. Or what? Quicksilver asks, as if I am still the aspiring politico he knew 12 years ago. I am not. She had better legs, but far less menace. Or I punish you in proportion to your ransom, I say. You are being intractable for some inscrutable reason, so you will be spanked. Oh dear. How? Will you shoot more of my belongings? Have Severo drop the ceiling and castrate Daedalus over there? A handsome young silver caught dinging in his ear regained his hearing at just the wrong time. He pales and looks at the ceiling. What did I do? I make condensed proteins. Grow up, Virginia. These antics of your family have grown tiresome. Quicksilver jabs a finger into the table. This is how the world works. Quid pro quo. I nod to Nakamura. She starts counting. 5, 4. Ridiculous theatrics. Quicksilver strokes that gold eyeball ring of his. Mateo isn't even this dramatic. 3, 2, 1. I walk toward the door. Remember, we built this republic, Quicksilver calls after me. Us, not you. His voice spikes sharply toward anger. Virginia, don't be a fool. Come back and be reasonable. You need us. That's what you fail to understand, I say at the door. There's no scarcity principle at play here, good man. You taught me better than anyone. Where there's a need, a silver will always appear. Doesn't have to be you. I toss the ear caps across the room. They land in Quicksilver's teacup. Your votes, good men. If not for the Republic, for yourselves. I leave. Holiday smiles as we enter my shuttle. Did you enjoy that, ma'am? She asks. Far too much. Will Seffi strike before the vote? I doubt it. We've gained half the silvers today, but in a month they'll all come begging. I look at my data pad and glower. To Sunhall. Looks like the goblin has made a new mess. Chapter 26. Virginia. The Goblin's Prey. The chief assassin of the syndicate is dead. The Duke of Head's cranium has replaced that of a neo-rococo mermaid who endures the unwanted attention of a particularly immoral agate satyr. The pool beneath is brackish with blood. Scarlet frogs hop along the lip of the fountain. I am thoroughly repulsed. Bravo, Severo. You've outdone yourself. Your wrath is so legendary. In my private office off Sun Hall in the Citadel, I chew the inside of my cheek and cycle the hologram. Theodora's investigators sent it from the North Hyperion mansion not 10 minutes ago. With Daxo managing the vote hunt, I have precious time to spare to search for evidence they missed. Just no time at all for my untouched dinner. The arch-assassin for the syndicate was a grey man, with a heavy mustachio held together at the ends by 2 platinum bands. He had big bones and a strong neck, before it was severed by a razor. Amplifying the image, I find minor imperfections in the cut. Severo's razor. He's the only howler who uses a serrated blade. Doesn't make much difference when the edge is so sharp, but he thinks it looks scarier. He's right. Little else remains of the Duke's body. The carnivorous fish in the pool below were as thorough as my tax collectors should be. All that remains is his skeleton and the hook that lowered him. What a waste of a chance. If Severo finds the Duke of Hands before I do, and does this, then I fear we will never find who is truly behind this. Since he snuck onto this moon, Severo has brought the horrors he learned on the front lines fighting the Fear Knight to the prime stream of the Holonet. I've managed to cover most of the massacres up, but some slip through. To make matters worse, he's in lone wolf protocol. No contact until the mission is complete. Until the Queen is dead. Damn Victra. For setting him to this madness. It has netted him little more than 800 syndicate thorns, 7 narcotics processing facilities, 16 minor nobles, a duke, and a duchess, but no queen. It has cost him far more. 3 howlers, 3 weeks of precious time, the attention of the Republic Warden, and a declaration of war by the Syndicate Queen. Gruesome details flicker past. Appendages nailed to walls. Headless bodies sitting around an equally offensive Tobaz table. Corpses in the atrium wearing glossy green armor. Emerald orphans by their markings. A freelancer company from Mars, consisting of elite ex-Legion Greys. Mercenaries. A predictable but frustrating escalation. Unable to stop him on her own, the Queen of the Syndicate has turned to the free market to rid herself of Victor's attack dog. The highest price contract in the history of the war hangs over Severo's head. It is sufficient to draw every bounty hunter, hitman, and freelancer in the Republic to Luna for the greatest private manhunt in a century. A small economy has spawned from the underworld wagers on who will claim the top prize. Severo will not see it coming. Death will fall from a quiet man atop a skyscraper some kilometers away, a smart slug, or a DNA-seeking hunter-killer drone. And then my brother's best friend is gone. He should be on Mars with Victra, or Mercury with Darrow, or working with me. Is revenge worth that much to you, Victra? God, she pisses me off. They underestimated the Queen, as did I at first. She has training, military-style organization and compartmentalization, safe houses, heavy arms, an impressive network of spies, even several military-grade attack ships. Theodora's women were thorough in their forensic investigation of the scene. I give up on finding exotic clues and deactivate the hologram. Here, in a vestibule of my private sanctuary, the walls are covered with fragments of paper, remnants of my childhood that Darrow thinks best burned. I keep them to remember what madness lurks within myself, to stay on the stiletto path, and realize what waits if I am tempted to wander off. Within the frames on the wall of the vestibule are 311 puzzles, all that remain of those that my brother Adrius would make for me when we were children. I stare at them. Many are mazes, other complicated cryptograms or esoteric experiments. Each I solved, but I cannot solve this puzzle of who threatens my republic. I gently stroke the leaves of the night lily at the base of the puzzles. Many more of the plants decorate the room. My office, like many of the rooms in the Citadel, contains defense mechanisms. Most are violent in nature, but some, like the escape tube concealed in the walls behind the puzzles, are only meant for retreat. I prefer the flowers, personally. The maids and staff know they are never to be touched on pain of incarceration. They don't know why. The lily's necrotic needles quiver at my touch, but it was gentle enough to leave them docile. If one seized the plant, the needles would spring forward. The pain is said to be worse than amputation. The poison spreads slowly, but eventually death follows. Dangerous to keep around, but so incongruent with the rest of my personality that it seems a necessary last line of defense. I cross my arms as I look at the puzzles. They all challenged me. My brother was clever, but once they are solved, they seem so simple. Will I think the same when I unwind the Queen of the Syndicate, when I discover why Quicksilver continues to stonewall? I look around. Am I being played? Right this very moment. A fire crackles in the hearth across the room, and I wonder if this isn't the beginning of my tragedy. If Victra falls in her clumsy gambit to retrieve my son, if no ships sail to Mars, will I reign for 60 more years in the shadow of their memories, an old woman in an empty castle? Boots clack against the metal floor behind me, and I seal the vestibule of puzzles behind a security wall. I just spit in the eye of my oldest ally, Nakamura, while the godfather of my son decorates my doorstep with corpses. I could really use some good news. I turn to face the centurion at the door. She wears a rare smile along with her black lion assault armor. In her arms is my white box. She got him. Lion Guard is kitted and ready to roll. I grab both her shoulders and kiss her straight on the mouth. She gawps at me and then laughs as I rush out the door. Come, Centurion! The hunt's afoot! 4 stealth shuttles filled with Lion Guard elite, a sovereign, and a former howler fly west as the Blitz presses into its 24th hour. Beneath, Hyperion boils. Armored, with my precious white box in my lap, I watch the holo displays. Dancer was right. Tempers have escalated.
On the Via Apennia, a human river of Vox march south toward Hero Center, united now with Lunese, who fear war returning to their moon. Optimate supporters and my husband's zealots march west along the Via Triumphia. Riot police, energy barriers, and mechanized units descend to keep the peace. Yet the demagogues keep pouring the fuel. Arch-Imperator Zahn stokes fear to swell the supporters of the Vox's radical wing.
She pounds her pulpit, as enthusiastically as a frigid blue can stirring up a frenzy of Lunese patriotism, claiming Atlantia will come to Luna, and not a ship will be left to protect the moon. Vox black chains, low-colour civilian shock troops wearing chained necklaces, terrorise high-colour neighbourhoods, beat silver businessmen, break windows, and intimidate local magistrates into begging senators to vote for Luna. Worried mid-colours flock to Dancer's moderation. He soothes them, his message carrying hope and notions of sacrifice. It is easy for them to feel noble. It isn't the children of Luna who die on Mercury. Despite Publius, the Incorruptible's public support for my cause, we have lost the Silvers, and the vote is descending into madness. Back home on Mars, Reds burn effigies of Dancer and march with slingblades. The same crowds that sing the forbidden song wave lion icons and chant, "Lion Heart, Reaper!" Arch-Governor Rolo gives a rousing screed that ends with, "Treason might float on Luna, but not on Mars." Any senator that votes to kill the Free Legions and the Reaper of Mars better enjoy that blood-sucking moon, for if they come back, I'll pull their bloody damn feet. Thunderous applause. To make matters worse, it looks as though the Obsidians will vote against me. Sephi is playing too many games for her own good. Does she not know that every step she has taken since she departed Luna has been part of my design? I thought her wiser than that. Amidst all this, a ray of light. Theodora has proven herself worthy of the second chance I gave her, after she resorted to torturing Lyria of Largolos against my orders. We unload on the roof of the black site before the shuttles can set down. Leading the Lion Guard ops team, Holiday jumps out like a quan hound, her flinty eyes roving the shadows for signs of danger, her ambi rifle packed with all sorts of Sun Industries mayhem. I land in grav boots with a heavy clomp, tuck my white box under my arm, and head toward a door stamped with radiation warnings. The black site is quiet. The lights dim. Behind two high-security doors, several of Theodora's splinter operatives, deadly pink assassins in next season's Hyperion Couture, lounge incongruously atop mass-produced furniture, smoking burners with a famous violet soprano of the Hyperion Opera. The soprano bursts to his feet upon my entrance. He's still wearing the costume of a Renaissance courtier, a rapier, a fur-trimmed nightcloak, and a carnival mask that dangles from a string around his neck. I applaud as he sweeps up from his low bow. My sovereign! Bravo, Basilicus. I heard your performance tonight was one for the ages, both the aria and the fourth act seduction. Would that I had seen it all. We all play our small part. His voice rings clear and thin. And what a stage you gave us, my liege. Perhaps you will attend the Orphea again soon, when the days are less dire. Lucreto does so miss your patronage. Of our great benefactors, we see not even the master carver these days. In fact, no one has seen Mickey for a month. I have my theories. Daxos are hilarious. Perhaps, I say to the splinter, we would all be better for seeing beauty more often. Your service tonight will not be forgotten. Hail, Reaper, he replies softly, pulling a small sling-blade necklace from beneath his cravat. He kisses the blade as though it was sacred. We pray to the veil and the old man who stands aside the path that he and the lost legions will be delivered. We also pray for you. Save your prayers to gods and spirits, Basilicus. Humans made this mess. Humans will fix it. The interrogation room is a soundproof white cube in the center of a dilapidated propaganda factory, the windows of which have been welded over. In the gloom, water slithers down hunched old machines to feed fungus growing on piles of plastic ages and toy vanguards. Two of Theodora's green psychotechs sit in front of the interrogation cube's transparent data wall, illuminated with neurological data from the prisoner inside. Theodora, I call as we cross the room. Your beautiful carnivorous flower. I'd kiss you, but it would fluster Nakamura. You're worth 10 legions, you gem. My spymaster wears a long black city cloak. Her white hair is coiled atop her delicate head like a nesting albino snake. Eyes, cold and lovely as rhodolite garnet, sweep over us. Only 2 legions, actually. But that was when I was 16. The smile of the shorter woman is slow and minor. A musk barely perceptible to even my senses lingers in the air. I feel a little nauseous. Hardly a coincidence. Do they know he's missing? I ask. He snuck away for his deprivations. We probably have several hours before they know. But they may have taken precautions. And the leak? Dripping. Nakamura, what are you doing? I call. She's crept closer to the interrogation cube. Theodora steps in her path and puts a delicate hand on her breastplate. Easy, girl. Holiday pushes her to the side in her eagerness to draw even closer to the Duke of Hands, stopping only when Theodora breaks smelling salts under her nose. Holiday blinks out of her reverie and looks down to see her safety is off on her rifle. She clicks it back on. Sorry, I... What was that? Pheromonal defense mechanisms, Theodora says. PDMs aren't that strong. His are. Theodora smears the smelling salt under Holiday's nose. Should be lucid now. Do tell us if you start getting a little warm down between the thighs, dear. A flush spreads across Holiday's cheeks. I'm fucking fine. Theodora turns back to me. You were right for us to use salts. He's also trained in psychosonics. Even my splinters had to wear ear caps to filter. I sniff the air. Smells like roses and poppy seed oil. Theodora is impressed. You can actually distinguish it. My, my. Would I love to take your nose on a walk through the forest? Yes, well, sewers are interesting. How did Ephraim manage against that man? I ask. Those pheromones would knock Darrow on his arse. Zolodone, Holiday says. He was jacked to the gills for a decade. Of course. Conclusion on our breed hypotheses? Custom hybrid. Eunomian embryo and either Priapian or Aenian sperm. Whichever it is, it made a rose of a very dangerous strain. Theodora looks back at the cell with a contempt, so gracefully articulated with her lips and eyes, that it makes me feel as coordinated as a bow-legged colt.
Rarer even than mine. I believe he came from the Hesperia Gardens breeding tubes. Hesperia? Holiday's eyes go sour. You've heard of it? I ask. She nods. Trig and I were sent there on a Dracone's kill detail once. We saw the death rooms. It was what made Trig pull the trigger to seek Ares. I believe they were called pruning chambers, Theodora says. Atalantia was a patron, I say, examining the man.
Could he serve her? Would he still? This whole charade doesn't fit Atlas.
But even absent hard evidence linking Atalantia, it's certainly eccentric enough for someone who learned her trade in the silk viper pit that was Octavia's court. I knew Atalantia for a little over a year. She made even Daxo seem tame.
Octavia often worried her erotophonophilia spoke of greater character flaws. Not that I can imagine anything worse than deriving sexual pleasure from executions.
Arja despised her for it. And now the psycho has the gold war machine, Holiday grunts. Shame your brother's pet crashed her ship into Hesperia.
Trig and I had a date with the proprietors. This Duke of Hands will have seen the worst of my kind. I feel no small amount of pity for that. But the two women standing with me are proof anyone can write their own destiny. I open my white box and head to the cube. I'll conduct the extraction myself. You'll want the salts, Theodora says, glancing warily at the cylinders in the box. Please, this horse rides for only one man. An hour later, pressurized air hisses as the door seals me inside again. The walls, ceiling and floor are white, but there are no corners and no perceivable curvature. It's as if the slender man sits in a chair at a table suspended in nothingness. Even with his pink hair lank and a bruise swallowing his left eye, the Duke of Hands is how I imagine Narcissus would look. Mythic vanity made supple flesh and angular bone, so physically attractive he could drown himself in his own reflection and not pity his own death. Already his body will be adjusting to me, intuiting my predilections, beginning its assault on my sexual drive. But they didn't call my father a cold fish for nothing. Houses of the conquering, especially mine, learned long ago the dangers an alluring pink could pose to the young scions of their line. In reply to this one's pheromonal assault, my neurological defense systems activate. Deep in my medulla, my chemoreceptor trigger zone detects the pheromones, interprets them as emetic agents, and relays stimuli to the integrative vomiting center, which nearly triggers emesis. It feels rather like radiation poisoning. Familiar. Thank you, Father. Swallowing the nausea, I peek around the table at the Duke's pink feather loafers. Radachi? He snorts in amusement. Quite. Hummingbird? Griffin. I wag a finger at him. The Valkyrie would have your ribcage.
Oh dear, a pity you've none about.
Word streetwise is that they've simply vanished, like a carnival trick. That must set you on edge, my sovereign. Not quite. The words are true, verbatim to the ones he spoke when he first saw me an hour ago. Incredible, the brain's consistency. I've planned this meeting for some time, and prayed it would happen before Severo found this chief prize. On the day my son disappeared, the master thief had already vanished into the city when my lion guard arrived at his Endymion high-rise, leaving only his blood behind. It had been sprayed with an agent to destroy its DNA markers. Seeking him has been like catching smoke. When I was a child, I begin. Oh, Jove, a story. I smile at the déjà vu. What a peculiar feeling this is. Does he not notice the ache at the back of his skull? My father took me to visit the Gens Votum. He was keen on impressing upon me the vagaries of Gens Votum diplomacy. But I was a young girl and easily bored. I looked at Mercury, and I did not see iron or political intrigue. I saw a strange, violent little planet with a master maker who carved desert mountains into wonders and jungles so deep and dark you'd think you'd lost the sun and ended up on Pluto. I begged Father to let me see the jungles. Simply begged. Till at last even he could not do anything but send me off. It was a ridiculous procession. Votum botanists and scientists accompanied me and Lion Guard and my father's politico, Pliny, into the heart of the jungle. There were many odd sights there, as you can imagine, but there was one that arrested me, one that reminds me of you. It was a scene I witnessed at dusk, not far from our camp. I was watching a zebra corps drink from the banks of a river when suddenly the jungle moved and a bush hydra struck from the tree line. It choked the zebra corps to death and then unhinged its jaw to swallow it whole. I'd never seen anything like it. There it lay, perversely gorged and supine. Right there, on the bank of the river. Couldn't believe my eyes. But it gets better. As it digested its meal, a single sarissa ant discovered it. You know them, of course. We found them in your high-rise. Soon there were 2 ants, then 10, then 1 million floating like water across the jungle. And, as the hydra lay glutted on the ground, too full to escape, I watched them devour it, till all that was left was a skeleton around another skeleton. He's been excreting pheromones at a phenomenal rate. Don't you think we'd be better without all those eyes watching us? He purrs. His eyelashes flutter. I wither under lights. Wouldn't you like to turn off the cameras? He asks. So much stress on those shoulders of yours. Wouldn't you like release? His tongue wets his upper lip. I can do that. You'll believe you've ascended into the clouds of Jupiter. I lean forward, as if drawn to his magnetism, then squeeze his nose and make a farting sound. His eyes go rancid. Cold bitch. Waste of hair. He sneers because my insult was better and leans back. They all say you're the brightest star in all the heavens, a face to make angels weep, and a mind to make a shadow of the sun. But you're just a withering meat, like all the rest, aren't you? He sniffs. I can smell the decay. Your tits already stretch and sag from childbearing. Your mind murmurs of the madness that ate your psychotic brother and wanders to the fate of your marooned husband and your little boy. And slowly, you begin to wonder if you're not a tragedy instead of a triumph. He laughed so sweetly you'd think he was massaging my feet. I suppose those maladies give you allowance to make such opera out of your childhood. He bats his eyes and leans forward, mouth open seductively. Honestly. Do I look a hydra? I finish for him. He pauses in confusion as I steal the words right out of his mouth. I keep going with what he's going to say because he said it just 40 minutes ago. Not that he remembers it. My bones are brittle as porcelain. my nerves tender and tight. Why, with one swat of your hand, you could shatter this frail anatomy. No, I am no hydra. I am the ant, and you are the fat snake who has swallowed what you cannot digest. And we surround you, devouring bite by bite by bite. He's dumbstruck, not understanding how I could possibly predict his little soliloquy. Perhaps, I say in reply to myself, perhaps you are right. Time will tell. But insects have short life expectancy, so I guess time kills too. Tough metaphor for you. He swallows, seeking confidence, some semblance of control. All my life, I've tamed myself not to frighten others. Sometimes it is fun to let the lion out. Have we met before? He asks. I lean forward. Wouldn't you remember? He considers the question, his mind stumbling over the gaps I made in his memory. He shakes his head. The tweaks I made to the psycho spike implanted in the back of his skull have improved results drastically. Octavia was so close to perfection with her pandemonium chair. The device was stored in her crescent vault. It has the capacity to shift through and edit memories. But while the chair is a blunt force instrument, my psycho spikes are scalpels. You really look so thin on the holos, the Duke of Hans says, eyes tracing my legs. But you must have me by 50 kilos for the chair to sag like that. The bone density is startling. I would ask if it's hard to swim, but I suppose everything's proportionate. I wonder. His eyes settle on my knuckles. Could you shatter my skull with one punch? Like a soft-boiled egg. It must be intoxicating, godlike. He admires it. He craves it. He knows he'll never have it, like my brother with father's love. I'd feel bad if I didn't know the dangerous pressure that he puts on a naturally cruel soul. But of course you do not notice. He licks his lips, nervously, off his game. He'd gotten used to owning the conversation. What do you think would happen if I were you and you were me? If I was given that war-born body of yours, and you were given this frail vessel of mine? Do you think you would have the courage to do as I have done? To wait behind a door, no older than 15, wondering who your master has sold your body to? He said this before, but I let him say it again. No one should steal these words from him. It is immoral. And then to see them enter and look at you like a meal without conscience or soul. Could you stomach it once, twice, satiating them? 1,000 times watching yourself be devoured, feeling them throbbing inside of your body, violating the only possession that you were given in this world until they shudder in ecstasy and at last withdraw and look at you with contempt. Are you that strong? No. I continue his train of thought, now allowed to steal the very words that he said from our earlier conversation. For the speeches to be so similar, he must have rehearsed this meeting many times. How could you ever sit where I sit now and face you down, never having been the stronger party in a fight? I dare say it would have broken you, but it did not break me. If I were given your body, your life, why, your hardest day would be a mean meal. And I touch my chest, would be king of all things. He's given up confusion for horror. Cat got your tongue, I say with a toothy smile. Now is where I offer you a reward for the queen. You spit in my face. You tell me you need no trinkets. You've gained them yourself. You are not my whore. What you have, you've taken. What you want, you will take. You are a man, not a rat, and a man must have a code. But it seems we are two apes dancing around fire. Shall we poke the blaze? You want to ask about your little boy, don't you? His unspoken words from my mouth incite a frenzy in him. But I keep going, torturing him, making him tiny. He's been raped and fed to dogs, I sneer. Piece by piece. They started with the legs and saved the eyes for last. Not even a twitch. Iceheart would have fit better. Don't you care about your son? Words have deserted him. He's trapped in a nightmare. Of course I care, but you don't have him, I say. Someone far more dangerous, but far more predictable, does. I glance at my data pad. Holiday has given the signal. Finally, the novelty was wearing off. Fidelity is confirmed. I have what I want. Bitch, he hisses. How are you in my head? What is this? In part, this is me measuring the fidelity of your brain patterns and predictive behaviour to help me develop an evolving technology. But more to the point, this is me killing time. His pretty eyes narrow. For what? Finally, the lights go out. The Goblin of Mars. Chapter 27. Virginia. Pack. You have to protect me. The Duke strains on his handcuffs. I'll never get used to seeing the fear Severo wakes in people. Deep down, they know Darrow is operating on a framework of logic. No one, not even me, believes that Severo is completely sane. How's the saying go? I ask the Duke. That's right. The Reaper may go through you, but the Goblin stays for 7 courses. I'm a prisoner. I have rights. You can't let him butcher me. I don't have the little bastards. I'm a prisoner of the Republic. I have rights. I'll see if he agrees. Wait, please. I disappear out the door as the Duke shivers in terror. With the power cut, the warehouse is dark, but for the lights around the small camp outside the interrogation cube. Theodora and Holiday sit at the table sharing tea, and quietly debating whether the white sand beaches of South Pacifica or coastal vineyards of Thessalonica are more pleasant. I join them and kick my feet up. Obviously South Pacifica. Impossible to get the stench of the Valleyi Wrath out of Thessalonica. Could you please pour me a cup, Centurion? Sugar? No, thank you. A little indulgence never hurt anyone, Theodora says. I raise an eyebrow toward the screaming Duke in his cube. Well, except for him. I sip the sugarless tea and scan the shadows, wondering if he's already there. Severo, stop wanking off in the shadows and come down. No response. We have tea! A shadow parts from the darkness amongst the rafters and lands in the centre of the floor. The short, plump figure wears light-absorbent tactical gear and a lupine helmet with a snarled snout and feminine ears. It is severely damaged and torn in several places. The helmet slithers back into its catch to reveal a round face with flushed cheeks. Pebble's smile is awkward. I tip my cup. Lo, Mars. Lo, Minerva. How is Luna treating you these days? Garbage detail. You know, better than dead horses, I guess. Is Severo joining us for tea or just going to skulk up in the rafters? Boss, she calls up. Think it'd be rude at this point not to... I hate tea. A synthesized voice growls from above. It's just coffee with piss instead of coffee. He says, he'll like this kind. I brewed it for him. She said you'll like this kind. She brewed it for you. Ask her what kind of tea it is. He wants to know what kind of tea it is. Wolfsbane, obviously. She says it's Wolfsbane tea. Silence. That's fucking hilarious. A second shadow parts from the ceiling and falls 20 metres to land with a thump beside Pebble. Covered head to toe in battered scarab skin and weapons, my son's godfather stands to his full, unimpressive height. He swings his multi-rifle round to his back, where it attaches to its magnetic holster. Though his fingers play with the hilt of his father's old razor, never has trusted me fully. He stops as he passes Theodora and fixes his helmet's eyes on her city cloak. Where's your wand, Merlin? Where's your wife, Savage? She eyes the scalps hanging from the hook on his utility belt, hardly impressed. Vile. Have you gone full Askamani, my dear? Please. The petty pirates copied me. Like Rollo with that goatee. Severo raises two fingers twisted together in the crux and slumps into the chair I kick out for him, though he does take a diva's care not to rumple the rancid wolf cloak that hangs from his left shoulder. Holiday pours him a cup from a second thermos. You look ridiculous, I say. Take off the helmet. Slag off. This is custom Scyther armor. The weird wolf head regards the cup with crimson duroglass eyes. I drink coffee. I squint at the armor. I knew it. You can't see color in that thing. He pauses. Then the cracked snout and spiked ears ripple backward into their catch to reveal a pinched, cruel face, pitted by relics of childhood acne, and almost more feral than the helmet itself. His head is shaved but for a short warhawk, with a zigzag running down the centre of it. He squints at the cup, sniffs, and finds that it is indeed coffee, not tea. You think your tricks are so charming, he says. He picks up the cup, pretending he isn't desperate for his private stash of Jamaican Blue Mountain. If I get even a slight bit dizzy, you get a trank in the face from Min Min. Holiday snorts. Like that ruster could hit the broadside of a Telemannus's ass. In mockery, she holds up her teacup by its handle. Half the teacup in her hand turns to powder as a silent rail slug passes through it and into the wall behind, striking it like a gong. Unimpressed, Holiday measures the remaining half of the cup and holds up the measurement to wherever Min Min is, as if the red were a sloppy shot. Guess it gets boring on campaign. Severo mutters under his breath and nods to Holiday. Holly? Sir? He fails to find a wolf cloak on her shoulder. You look lost. She actually looks ashamed. For not going with Darrow? For sitting beside me instead of Severo? I didn't spend time to think of that. Just because she's doing what she thinks is right doesn't mean she likes it. Whatever closeness I feel to Holiday must pale in comparison with the intimacy of the pack. 10 years on 4 spheres. They're her home, and Severo is the master of the house. No wonder a toga would sound so horrible. I feel suddenly like a presumptuous interloper. I was lost, Severo. How was Venus? Vacations, you know. Hopped around the islands, visited some old friends, warmed ourselves by a fire, then came home to an empty house. Speaking of fire, how's the cooch rash? Better than your face. Good. So you'll be bringing your kid stealing rat fuck relation to me in no time. He's got a special reservation. He pats his scalp hook. Yeah, you can get back to me with that answer, but I'm charging interest. He sips his coffee and glares at me. So, Stang, you found the right bait to make yourself a wolf trap. Clever you. Well, you weren't answering my calls. He barely shrugs. Didn't even have the courtesy of telling me you were on Luna. That's hardly the behaviour I expected from my son's godfather. Was busy eating my way up the food chain. He rolls his head to crack his neck, uncomfortable with the stillness. You talk with the apex asshole? I nod, before he made landfall. He woke the storm gods. He saved his army, I correct. So Mercurian lives don't count, he asks. More to me than to you, I imagine, I reply. He shrugs. Pebble always wanted to surf. He glances over his shoulder. Didn't you, Pebble? That was Thistle, sir. Who? Thistle was the howler who betrayed them and joined my brother's Bone Riders 10 years before. That's how Severo is. Betray him and you're purged from existence. The civilian toll was likely catastrophic, I say. But go on and make jokes. Civilians, he snorts. You haven't met many Mercurians lately. Mosquitoes, all of them. If Darrow wants to die, he couldn't pick a better planet to take with him. Those freaks actually like chains. He yawns. Surprised. Thought if anyone could get him to come back for his boy, it'd be you. Oh, so we're making him a monster, so you feel better, I reply. I said, Pax is in danger. Race back and rescue him because I'm not actually the most powerful person in the Republic. I need my husband. Boo-hoo, weak and helpless am I. Pax needs you. I look at Pebble. And Darrow replied, Pax who? Severo just sits there. I didn't ask him to come back, you little diva. I agree with his decision. He's where he should be. His eyes narrow. You're a mother. How could... Careful, Severo. I've never questioned your love for your children. Do you really want to question mine? He chose war over his boy. He's gone iron gold on us. Doesn't care about anything else. He drawls. And you want to pretend that was easy for him. I see. Does that soothe your conscience? It was a long ride back from Venus. He looks away. Don't tell me you weren't eaten alive with guilt. Electra is one person, one. You chose her over 10 million who die for you. 10 million you inspired, who chanted your name, who left their families behind to follow you. It's risky, but he needs this slap in the face. What about your responsibilities? What about the families of the Free Legions? What about your oath to this fuck the Republic? Behind him, Pebble looks at the floor. I thought so. Selfish jackass, Holiday snaps at him. Traitorous twat. Traitor? That's rich after Wolfgar. Accident, he looks at me. He got in our way. He jerks his head back at Holiday. Seriously, shut the fuck up. You don't even have a kid. We were your family. We put you back together after Trig punched the ticket, and you didn't even have the balls to come with us to Venus. So teeth together and look crusty beside your new master, because we all know you're wet bread inside. Theodora really doesn't like that. Severo, dear, you haven't had your balls for 10 years. You gave them to Victor as a bridal dowry. And let's not get started on how many times I've seen you cry. Wet bread indeed. Severo looks calmly over to me. They know our hit women, right? We're trying to save Darrow's life, I say. We are trying to protect the future while you... My girls are my future, he snaps. They've got a lot of life ahead of them. Only way they'll be safe is if I teach the Syndicate a lesson no one will ever forget. If you touch a Barker, you cease to exist.
You are short-sighted, emotional, and in dereliction of duty, Imperator.
I glare at Pebble and at the shadows on the ceiling. That goes for all of you. Pebble rocks from foot to foot. You want me to butter you up? Say I understand. Give you a hug? Get over yourself, Severa. Talk, talk, talk. Severo spits on the table, getting my hand. The coffee does little to hide the halitosis he gets in the field. Gross. Slag it. My balls are growing a beard. He pulls Tickler, a knife as long as a child's forearm, from his boot, and sets it down on the table. You got a duke that needs castrating. We got history, so I gave you a word. Bored now. You won't be castrating anyone, I say. Think you can stop me? A grin slashes his face. When was the last time you got your hooves bloody in a tussle, horsey? You're going to need more than those 40 rear echelon pixies on the roof and old Holly here to stop us. Maybe you got big bitch Daxo hiding in the wings. A horde of Lion Guard waiting to pounce. You don't want to go full metal with me. Not today. Don't insult your own intelligence by insulting mine, I reply. If I wanted to put you in irons, I'd have activated a containment field and embedded gravity engines in the ground that would subject you to an ungodly quantity of G's that would knock all of you idiots unconscious in your fancy armour, scyther made or not. But I didn't, because this is a family affair, and I fear further damage to your already questionable grey matter. He doesn't trust me. Winkle, he says into his comm. Sky? Still clear? He grunts at the reply. Keep an eye out. Daddy's gonna carve a steak. He sets his coffee down and stands. You're not the only one who lost a child, I say. That makes him pause. Yet you play this charade, knowing the pain I'm in, knowing the fear I feel. I would never do this to you. It's one of the first times I've seen pity in his eyes. Pax is safe. We got it under control. You have half the bounty hunters in the Republic after you, I say. The wardens are one step behind. You and my husband killed Wulfgar. He was their founder, their war hero. Accident or not, they want blood. I put a hand on the table, minding the spit. Severo. Brother. What about this seems in control to you? That plays on his guilt and his insecurities. He doubts Victra's plan. His shoulders curve forward into the slump he always wore as a young man. Selfishly, I want him to choose to tell me. I need that choice from him so I don't resent him for the rest of my life. Severo, where is my boy? I ask one last time. His eyes are starting to go glassy. I know this isn't your doing. You'd be with your daughters, not carving up my city. But you can choose to tell me. He swallows, looking for some escape. He wants to tell me, but he loves his wife more than his conscience. I wasn't here, he mutters. I had Darrow's back till I had to have Victor's. You're third in line, so don't keep asking. We'll get Pax to you. That's an oath. But I gotta have my wife's back. So you won't tell me. Maybe I'll tell Mustang. But you ain't her. You're the sovereign now. I finally get that. V's been telling me that for years. You're the sovereign. Darrow's the Reaper. Everything else is second. Shit, I ain't even supposed to be talking to you. Yet you are. He nods. I'll catch hell for it. She thinks you're some sort of mind reader. Or that I'm a dumbass and I'll spill the beans. Probably true. It hurts to see him like this. I want to be angry with him. In some ways I am. But this isn't his fault. Victra is to blame. Julie have always had cantankerous genes. There is no right or wrong for her. Only hers and everyone else. I was her. It was a warm place to be. But over time I alienated her as Virginia shrank and the sovereign grew. Perhaps it was inevitable. A fault line between the consciousness of our two clans that now has ripped open into a gulf. It may never mend. But Severo is Severo. I have to believe that. No matter what he does, he doesn't go cold like Victra and Darrow. This is breaking him apart. The horrid violence. The lowered head. The refusal to communicate. All remnants of his early survival mechanisms. Do we ever leave them behind? I don't need him to betray Victra. I can't ask him for that. But I can relieve this burden from him, and maybe this gulf between us. Communication is our salvation. Severo, I already know what she's doing. Nah. His eyes harden. She said you'd say that. Try to pick me for intel. He hefts his knife. Now stay real still. I don't want to poke any of you, but this needs doing. He's never seen the Queen's face, Severo, I say. We'll see about that. He expects Holiday to rise up and block his path as he walks toward the cube, but she stays seated, as I ordered. I know why Victra went to Mars, I call after Severo. He doesn't stop. She's going to pay the ransom. He stops short of the interrogation cube's door. Victra wouldn't go to Mars unless our children were there. And you wouldn't dare attack the Syndicate if they still had them. So they don't. Nice try. I ain't falling for it. That leaves us with four possibilities. A third party hired the syndicate to steal the children and receive them as planned. A fourth party intervened and has them, and the syndicate's original plan and backer are out of luck. Or Ephraim sold the children to another buyer. Or he absconded with the children and is ransoming them. Holiday emotes nothing. Severo turns his head a quarter of the way around. The last two are unlikely, judging by the fact we found Ephraim's right leg at the crash site. The first is unlikely because the syndicate has put out a bounty on Ephraim and made no ransom demands to me. So that leaves the second possibility. A fourth party has them. Severo turns all the way around. I feel a sudden swelling of excitement as I realize he won't betray Victra, but actually wants me to guess it right. He wants to come in from the cold. He doesn't want this division. But at the same time, he's afraid his wife is right. If I guess what they're doing, I'll bring a stop to it. Assuming that is correct, and taking into account Victra's actions, they have asked for a ransom from Victra instead of me. Wise. Victra is paying that ransom. It is a ransom she thinks I would not pay, otherwise why cut me out of the loop, considering my assets? She may be spiteful, but children are sacred to her. She'd never hurt me that way to teach me a lesson. She prefers knuckles to jaws. So, what do you two have that I don't have? And who is it valuable to? The list is appallingly small. Shipyards, ore haulers, trade ships and hubs. Taking into consideration the curiously timed pilgrimage Sephi has taken to Earth and the overabundance of evidence supporting her existence there, I know she is not on Earth. Nor is she with the Obsidian fleet heading opposite Mars's orbit toward the Belt under auspices of chasing Obsidian pirates. She is on Mars, all still within the heart of Venus, which she purchased through a shell company, awaiting Victra's ships and possible further aid in stealing Quicksilver's helium mines in Cimmeria. I lean forward. That's aiding and abetting an attack on Mars. Severo has gone very still. His eyes flick to Pebble. Look at me, I say. No one betrayed you. This is simply what I do. The shame is apparent on his face, but he holds my gaze. Sephi said she would kill Electra and Pax if we didn't get her the ore ships. You believe her? Ragnar was my brother, but Sephi is ice. If you interfere, I don't intend to. He cocks his head. Could we stop them getting the mines? Yes. But not without dire cost to the Ecliptic Guard and the Martian legions. We will need all we have when gold comes. Obsidian lost too many at Mercury, a planet they can't even live on. They are done with the offensive war, but if they have a stake on Mars, if they have a homeland, they'll defend it against the slavers. War has stretched us thin. We haven't had the money to rebuild Cimmeria. They will, from the helium they sell us. Helium we already buy from Quicksilver. We haven't the resources to divert to eliminating the Red Hand. Sephi will, with greater prejudice and focus than I could. Quicksilver has convinced the Zenith Ring they own the Republic. He's in need of a valuable lesson. And what does it cost us? Land and pride. Two things we can spare. The public will cry foul, but it will happen after the vote. Soon Atalantia will come. The Silvers will fall in line. Sephi will understand I allowed it when I withdraw all Republic forces as soon as they begin their assault. The first ambassadors she receives will be Darrow's brother, Kieran, and Kavax's wife, Niobe. They will have weight with her. They will offer a defensive military alliance with the Republic and secure a helium contract. Then we turn our eyes on Atalantia. Victra said, "We thought you would never let it happen." Victra can be an idiot, and so can you. When can you say the same for me? I wait. I'm sick and tired of everyone swimming around like drunk piranha because they assume I am toothless. Whether or not we save Darrow, atomic war is coming to the Republic. The time for disunity is over. Finally, I stand up and step toward him. You are in a democracy, Barker. The people chose me as sovereign. They choose me to lead. Until my term or life comes to an end, I am in command. If you want to abandon the republic we built to play with your kids, fine. Slag off and wait for mushroom clouds. But if you want to be a part of it, get your head out of your arse, stop making my life difficult, and report for duty. Clown falls from the ceiling to land beside his wife. Min Min comes next. One by one, the howlers separate from the shadows to join them on the floor until 25 of the hardest killers in a democracy of 8 billion stand, looking at Sevro. Their demands are clear. Sevro picks his teeth with Tickler, tucks the blade away and snaps to attention. The howlers stomp their heels together.
Imperator Barker and Howler, first cohort, reporting for duty, ma'am. Good to have you back, Imperator, I say. Your first order. I motion him forward and wipe salt under his nose, then place my datapad controller to the Duke's psychospike in his hands. There is a terrorist in that interrogation cube. When I tell you, activate this program. Afterward, if he knows what color his eyes are without looking in a mirror, shoot him in the head. Can you perform this task, Imperator?
Sevro raises an eyebrow at me. He knows I know he wants to torture the Duke for the Queen's location. He wants to express his doubts. But if I don't have his trust after what just went down, I'll never have it. I need to know now.
Yes, ma'am.
He walks into the cube. I watch with the howlers from outside. The odour returns on the sound. The Duke is snorting in thin derision at Sevro.
Think I'm afraid of you, mongrel. I've seen my queen make eunuchs with her Quan hounds. I've seen her kill a room full of Endymion heavies with nothing but a hatchet. I've seen her melt babies in acid. I'll never tell you where she is.
Sevro squints at the Neurolink and activates the program. The image of a masked woman in a crown fills the room.
It ripples past, replaced by Gorgo, the Queen's right hand.
A derelict tank manufacturing plant blooms. More images of syndicate facilities whiz past. Sevro goes very still when the face of an old friend appears in the images. Dancer. At first he must think it's some mistake. Then more holograms of the man appear in the Duke's memory. Sevro looks at me through the glass with a dead look in his eyes.
Boyo, I think you already did tell us, Sevro whispers.
The Duke stares in horror at his memories given holographic form. He begins to scream at what he's done, not understanding, not knowing how we have the secrets he would have died to protect. Then, the program moves to its second phase. The psycho spike on the back of his skull glows. The Duke goes rigid, his eyes blank. The veins of his neck stand out. In 5 seconds, it is all over. He slumps in the chair, breathing heavily. When he looks up, he is not the same man. Gone is the agony. Gone are the inflections of sexuality. He is purged of himself. Sevro is even taken aback. Theodora smiles over at me.
What colour are your eyes? Sevro asks.
The man who was the Duke of Han stares at Sevro in confused terror.
What colour are your eyes, asshole?
The Duke touches his eyes. For a moment, I think I miscalculated, and I've wiped his verbal functions. Then he stammers an answer.
I don't know.
He looks at Sevro's eyes and gives the logical answer. Red? Sevro looks wide-eyed back at us through the cube.
Whoa.
He turns back to the man who was the Duke.
Do you know who I am? What's my name?
The man shakes his head, terrified of the armored beast in front of him.
Who wouldn't be?
What did you do? Pebble asks me.
Octavia was a paranoid autarch. Fearing deception, she employed teams of violet carvers and orange master makers to create biological esoterica and machines to divine truth. There is one that piqued my interest upon accessing her vault. It was the apogee of her devices, one called the Pandemonium Chair, a battering ram into the mind, so to speak, a crude one which I've been refining as a way of decompressing before bed. I gesture to my white box to show her the three thin spikes no longer than a red's pinky. I call them psycho spikes, far more elegant than the chair, far more useful. Whatever was the Duke of Hands, memories, predilections, personality, is now erased. He is tabula rasa. I hold up a small data chip. That which was flesh is now silicon. By Jove, Pebble whispers. Is it permanent? We will see. The howlers scoot closer to the cube. I tell Holiday to prepare to depart. Theodora, your new recruit is ready. I advise a restart with the spike before uninstallation. No one should have to look at Severo the moment they're born. I think the Duke of Anne's will make a fine splinter, she says with a smile. With some tender love and care, he might even become as patriotic as you, my sovereign. I am counting on it. Inside the cube, the man who was the Duke is shaking like a leaf. Severo has his helmet up now to terrify him. Severo circles and sees the small metal spike embedded at the base of the man's skull. He comes back around and crouches in front of the overwhelmed Pink, cackling with laughter.
Boyo! Sorry to be the one to tell you this, but I think you just got skull-fucked.
He leaves the Duke there and stomps out of the interrogation cube. How long have you known about Dancer? He asks me. Less than an hour. And what does my sovereign propose to do with the traitor? He asks. Isn't it obvious? I reply. Communicate.
Chapter 28. Ephraim. Karachi. The Skugi and I squander our first days together on basic language skills, which I offload to yellow linguists and data drops, while I rely on a translation insert for my ear so I can understand the coldbloods. They're not babies. Most, like Freyhild, serve a tour or two in the Free Legions. They know more than they let on, but hundreds of years of gulls culling the clever ones has taught them to hoard information behind masks of stupidity. They play dumb or angry when they don't trust you, and they don't trust me a lick. Thought my D's would get me some street cred, false hope, as Freyhild is only too keen to impart. I violated the sanctity of one of their sacred heroes by filching the Reaper's brood. Pax is literally a godchild to them, Electra not far behind. No amount of Osgard's support will gain their respect. While the social element of my improvised training regimen flounders, the Obsidians are natural physical learners. Like Volga, they learn the tricks of my trade as fast as children picking up a new sport. By week's end, they're destabilizing laser grids, dissecting thermal sensors and picking locks. Some already knew laser grids from the Legions, but their methods are outdated and grunt slop. Still, you only have to show them something once. Telling them something, on the other hand, is like trying to push a whole handful of sand through an ear canal. You lose right about 90% of it. Over the next weeks, my primal terror of being crushed underfoot diminishes, and I settle into a comfortable routine. On occasion, Pax stops in from his own lessons to watch. He shakes his head one day, when the 30th Obsidian in a row is unable to tell a lie to one of Sun Industries' first-generation lie detectors. Compared with modern bloodhounds, this thing's as gullible as a 19-year-old farm boy with a concussion, I shout. Most operatives rely on being inconspicuous, You will never be inconspicuous. You are very conspicuous, so you must be good liars. Next. As the next Scoogie ambles up to try their hand, I slump over to Pax. Go on, I know you want to correct me, half-breed, I say, plopping down beside him on a low wall. His chin sports a fresh bruise from Valdir's martial lessons. No wonder he's not warming to them. Actually, I was coming to say thank you, he says. For what? Seffi's started letting me use the garage at night. There's an old two-seater grav bike they found in one of the old depots. Looters didn't think it worth stealing. Used to belong to Carnus Albellona. She's letting me take a crack at fixing it up. Spent all last night taking off the kill spikes. Thought I had you to thank for it. Don't know what you're talking about. I certainly do. After his brutal protests against Seffi's attempts at instruction and her command that I bring him close, I thought it best to do a little recon to see what thorn was under the little lord's saddle. Seems Seffi's personal oranges have noted spanners and hypercrooks missing from their stores. Considering the security in the household complex, there were few possible culprits. A single night's stakeout provided the answer I suspected. Who was it skulking in the garage in the dead of night? Why, the Reaper's own. He'd slipped away from meditating in the Tranquility Gardens with Osgard. When I visited the garden, Osgard was deep in a trance, trying to decipher the message in the vein.